Welcome to Inspiration at Work, where you will hear from business leaders from around the world on what they are doing at work and through work to make the world a better place. This is the most positive talk radio show on the planet, where we have evicted the tenets of cynicism and criticism and set up residence on Inspiration Boulevard, right in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. And now, your host, America's Chief Inspiration Officer, Terry Barber.
Welcome back to another edition of Inspiration at Work, and we have quite a great, fantastic, inspiring type of show set up for you today. Tamara, it's nice to see you back in the studio. Thank you for being here.
A pleasure as always.
Hey, you know, our guest today has helped us to break a barrier as a show. We can now officially call ourselves a global radio show because Phil Johnson, who is our guest, is actually a resident of Canada. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Terry and Tamara. It's an honor to be on your show.
Hey, Phil, we are very excited about being able to open a window of your life and for you to be able to share any number of things. Some of the things I noticed just as a highlight in terms of who you are and what you do, you're an executive coach. You have been a very successful corporate executive in the past, but now you're a free agent and seem to have an enormous wonderful kinds of things going on in terms of making the world a better place and making people better, and not to mention this thing that you refer to as the master of business leadership. And it sounds like that has really become a hallmark for you.
Yeah, this is actually a journey that began for me about 42 years ago. And I started developing what I now refer to as the Master of Business Leadership System about 25 years ago, and I've been offering this to executives and organizations around the world now for the last 10 years. So it's a passion for me, and I welcome the opportunity to talk about it.
Awesome. And one of the other things I've noticed, and I'm sure it's part of your program in terms of what you teach and what you have to share, but I've noticed an awful lot about your blogging, your following you on Twitter and whatnot, that you have a lot to offer and a lot to say about in and around the space in the world of emotional intelligence. Tell us why that's so important to you.
Thank you. It's incredibly important, especially in the times that we're living now. We're going through what a gentleman named Ray Kurzweil, he's been in New Jersey, he's a scientist out of New Jersey, and he estimates that in the next 20 years, we're going to go through the equivalent of about 100 years worth of change. So change is, and by the way, that's going to continue to increase beyond that. Changes move from being occasional or episodic to continual. And nobody likes change. Individuals don't like change. Organizations don't like change. And they want better results, but unfortunately, most of us try to get better results by continuing to do what we've been doing to get our current results, and that's just not going to work. So the fear that's associated with change, both within an individual and an organization, needs to be overcome, and the way we do that is through the development of our emotional intelligence. Without getting too technical, in our brains, whenever we try to move out of our comfort zone, we have this mechanism called the psycho-cybernetic mechanism that sends a signal to our amygdalas to cause us to feel fear and anxiety. And left unchecked, that can really hinder us from moving forward. And it's really our emotional intelligence that helps us to quiet those fears and allows us to take the actions we need to get better results.
So let's kind of open that up for just a minute and be very specific. I've come to work one day. I noticed that not only is the environment changing in terms of the business climate, but somebody's moved my stuff. Maybe even I find myself in a completely different division than where I was last week. And so now, what's kind of the basis of the fear that I am beginning to surface?
It's primal, actually. We're the products of millions of years of evolution, and the unconscious part of our brain, which is responsible for about 98% of our results, would really rather avoid any change and looks at any change as with fear. So we're recognizing that, and organizations are recognizing the value of the development of emotional intelligence more and more. When you look at companies like Apple and Google and Disney and Southwest Airlines and JetBlue and Whole Foods, these are examples of organizations that are developing the emotional intelligence of their employees, not only to create higher levels of engagement within their organization and with their customers, but also to be able to embrace the changes that we're all going through.
Well, that's a huge step. First of all, to be aware of the fact that it's something within us, and to accept fear. How do you go about addressing emotional intelligence, and how do we learn to become more self-aware?
That's a great question, Tamara. And you're absolutely correct that awareness is the essential first step in any change. And how we develop our emotional intelligence comes from our actions. It comes from what we do rather than what we think. So the focus in the MBL system, or the Master of Business Leadership system, is on actions and results moving you towards what you want. And in doing that, you actually move through your fears, habits, and perceptions, and you actually develop new neural network pathways. And brain scientists, there's a lot that's been learned about the brain in the last 5 to 10 years, primarily due to advances in technology, things like MRIs and PET scans. They can actually watch the brain work. And a lot of the way they thought it worked in the past, they know now is not true. And the brain has the capacity, it's called neuroplasticity. So what that means is that regardless of our age, we can develop new neural network pathways or new habits and beliefs simply by practicing, by taking different actions. So doing that over time is what's necessary to create those new habits that are going to get us better results, ultimately with less effort and more fun.
So, Phil, I was being just halfway facetious about the setup in terms of some of the things that people may endure relative to change and experience the change. But really, what are some of the more preeminent and dominant changes that you see going on in the life of business today?
One of the big challenges is employee engagement and lack of vision. Most organizations are focused more on the how and the what as opposed to the why, their vision. So they end up working very hard, but they're not really sure where they're going. So having a clear, passionate vision, a consensus vision within the organization, is the essential first step that creates the motivation that allows people to move towards it. And without that, think of it like an engine, employees being the pistons in a car. The more they're aligned, the better the car runs, the better the gas mileage. the less they're aligned, the more disengagement there is. And that's actually a huge problem. Gallup estimates currently that the level of workforce engagement is around 25 to 30%. If you think about that, let's, as an example, say you have a company with 10,000 employees and the average labor cost, including benefits and salaries and bonuses, is $100,000 a year. So that organization is spending $1 billion a year, and if their level of employee engagement is 30%, then they're wasting $700 million a year. And I can tell you that that's absolutely the case in many organizations and in many economies. So over and above the need to embrace continuous change, we can no longer live with the level of employee engagement that we see in many of our organizations.
Are the two related, Phil, that is change and unengaged employees?
Not necessarily. You can have unengaged employees where there's no change. It's essential, though, to be able to embrace change, that your employees have the emotional intelligence they need to move forward. They do it in a more engaged fashion.
I like this, your discussion about the why. In fact, there's that great viral YouTube going around. Is it Sinek? It Start With Why?
Yeah.
I mean, it's talking too about our physical being and the brain. So you two are very much aligned in that conversation.
It's actually fundamental, and it's something that when we join an organization or when we do anything, we start out from the why, from the strategic activities that are strategically important but not urgent. Invariably, though, we get pulled into more and more activities that are urgent and important, and we lose sight of our vision, we lose sight of why we're doing what we're doing, and that creates a lot of chaos within the individual and within the organization. So getting back to an understanding and a consensus around why we're doing what we're doing is the fundamental first step in creating better results.
You mentioned this pattern, Phil, of fears, habits, perceptions. Is that how you go about unpacking or addressing those core issues when you're doing consulting and training?
That's a big part of it initially. We don't know what we don't know. And a lot of the unconscious habits, attitudes, and beliefs that fuel our actions or inaction were developed very early on. About 50% of our belief system or paradigm is in place by the time we're 4 years old. And it's about 60 to 70% by the time we're teenagers. So change requires that we become more conscious of what's going on in us and around us. A lot of what we do now, we do unconsciously because we've been doing it for years.
And you have found that training or education in terms of a service line into the organizations you work with can help address these core issues?
The MBL system really has three key components. The first one is helping the individuals become more conscious, both cognitively and emotionally, what's going on inside of them. Then it gives them a better set of tools and insights to begin practice using, and helping to focus on their vision, what it is they want to accomplish, what they want, creates the fuel or the motivation to take action. And this is very much a process focused on actions and results. one of the first things I tell people that I begin coaching is, I don't care what you think. I only care what you do, because your doing will ultimately change your thinking. And that's a very different message than we get growing up. Often we try to think our way into acting differently. And the MBL system demonstrates that it's much easier to act our way into thinking differently. So if the tools you're using are more authentic, then you're going to tell yourself a story to justify using those better tools, and you're going to get better results.
So does that, you're right, that's very counterintuitive in terms of how we've been raised and how most of the world thinks today. Does that mean that there's a place for what has been sometimes referred to as fake it till you make it?
Yes. From a vision perspective, though, the clearer you can identify with your own passionate vision, the more motivation you will have to move in that direction. Think of it as your vision as the fuel for the journey. The clearer you are about what you want and the importance of that to you as an individual or an organization, the greater the motivation you will have to take the actions to move in that direction.
Makes absolutely perfect sense. I wonder, Phil, if you might have you don't have to reveal names, but an anecdote or a case study that you may be able to share in terms of seeing this played out.
Look at Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King had a vision. He didn't say, I have a 12-point plan. He said, I have a dream. And that strong emotional component resonated with people. And all people we would know, for instance, Edison, Lincoln, Walt Disney. Walt Disney got turned down by over 2,000 banks before he was actually able to obtain enough financing to begin construction on Disney World. And he actually died before it was completed. And somebody said, you know, isn't it too bad that Walt never got a chance to see his dream come through? And the person said, well, he really did, because if he hadn't already seen it, then we wouldn't be seeing it. So when you have a vision, John Kennedy, in 1961, he had a vision to send a man to the moon and bring him back safely. And at the time, the scientists, everybody said, you know, it's not possible. We can't do it. And the mistake they were making is that they were looking from the current reality as opposed to the vision, the desired result. And they said, you know, John, how are we going to do it? He says, I don't know, but we're going to do it. So let's assume that, you know, we've already done it and start moving in that direction. And that's exactly, the focus is always on actions and results moving towards a passionate vision. As a matter of fact, if your vision, if you already know at the outset how you're going to achieve your vision, it's not a big enough vision. It's not going to motivate you to take action and move in that direction.
I have no doubt that the effective casting of a vision does more to help inspire an employee group and an organization than almost anything else we could possibly do. Who are some of your heroes today in business who are great visionaries?
Steve Jobs would definitely rank up there. And a lot of the people I coach, because one of the benefits that I experience is I can watch, be part of the individuals that I work with and the organizations that I work with in helping them to develop their authenticity and the authenticity of their environment. So they're actually getting better results that require less effort and more fun. So so I have the great honor of being in that kind of environment every day.
And when you speak of Steve Jobs in particular, I think what is really fascinating about that is that his vision has really impacted so much more than just his employee base, right?
Yep. Yeah, and that's the key essential assets of the 21st century are a company's employees, their customers, their business partners, and suppliers. And Apple is a great example of an authentic leadership environment and the importance of emotional intelligence. When you go into an Apple retail store and you see what's going on and you sense the energy, it's very much like kids playing. And that is an example of an emotionally intelligent environment. The Apple employees want the people that come into their store to have a great experience. They're far less concerned about the person buying something. They want that individual to leave and go and tell their friends. And that's really what they're after. And the only way, it's interesting, there's an Apple retail store close to where I live. And every once in a while I go over there and kind of stand outside and watch the interaction and watch the customers and the employees playing together. And it's quite exciting. And the energy and the activity level is far greater than most of the other stores in the area.
So I take it you're a fan?
Absolutely.
Hey.
As a matter of fact, a few weeks ago I was talking with one of the employees that had just finished interviewing about 30 people for some roles in their store. And out of the 30 people that could all do the job from an experience point of view, they ended up hiring one or two, and the main criteria was emotional intelligence. Mm. So very much from an organizational development point of view, emotional intelligence is becoming a prerequisite for employment and promotion.
Wow.
You might want to think of it as emotional intelligence is the 9/10 of the iceberg under the water, and IQ and experience as being the 1/10 above the water.
Wow.
So there's a...
What a change.
There's a huge multiplier effect by developing the emotional intelligence of everybody you come in contact with.
Phil, being authentic, there's such a freedom to that, isn't there?
Well, Tamara, yeah, it's actually our default condition. It's our natural way of being. As I say, very early in life, we start to develop our paradigm or our belief system, and we learn to be victims and give away our energy very early in life. So becoming authentic is really a much more natural condition. There's somebody that I started coaching about 5 years ago, and without getting into it too much or mentioning any names, she's had several promotions and now is a senior vice president running a large global IT project. And in our first meeting, she said that, Phil, she said, I really want to go through this process, but the one concern I have is that I like who I am and I don't want to change who I am. And I said, that's great, because I don't want you to change who you are either. But I do want you to be who you are, not who you think you are, but who you really are. Mm. And very often that's quite different.
Mm. Well said. Well said. Phil, we're getting close to the end of the program, and I do not want our time to get away from us without taking the moment and you sharing a little bit out of your personal life in terms of your own personal defining moment. I read a little bit in your bio about, it looked like you maybe had more than just one, but if you would just maybe pick one that you would say, above all else, this was a turning point in my life, and tell us that story.
It was the death of my mother on December 3rd, 1967. I had been born about 2.5 months prematurely. I weighed about 4 pounds. And I didn't realize until about 15 or 20 years ago that I'm dyslexic. I didn't do well in grade school. I failed grade 3 and I failed grade 5. I was in a gang, and some of the people that I grew up with went to prison. And there were a lot of challenges for me early in life. My mother's death was a turning point for me, and I can remember clearly in January of 1968 being, I knew where I was, and I made a commitment that I wanted to make my life count for something. And that year really changed a lot of things. I really began to change a lot of things in my life. And what I do now is really coming full circle for me with the promise I made in January of 1968 to help people be who they truly are, individuals and organizations.
And, it's clear that that has not only marked your life in terms of a turning point, but you've actually used that as, in some ways, to use your own metaphor, as fuel to move you in the direction that you're continuing to head on.
Yeah, I spent 25 years in the semiconductor industry. We generated about $1 billion in revenue, and I was doing a lot of traveling in a corporate role. And I really it helped me to recognize the need for the development of authentic leadership at every level. And with what's going on in the world today and the rate of change that we discussed earlier, it's absolutely essential. This is a message and a passion of mine that I plan on doing for the rest of my life. Hmm. It's fundamentally important, in my opinion, to the planet.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing your life, your passion, your gifts with us and our listeners today. Phil, I'd love to give people the opportunity to reach out to you. Is there a website, an email address, or something that you would and could share?
Absolutely. The best way to reach me is via email, and that's at mblcoach@masterofbusinessleadership.com. That's mblcoach@masterofbusinessleadership.com. And they can reach me via Skype as well. And my address there is mblcoach.
And I'll vouch for the fact that they can also reach you through LinkedIn.
Oh, yes. That's true. I'm on LinkedIn regularly.
Tamara, anything else?
I just thank you so much for sharing your gifts. I mean, I've truly blown away today by your talk, your discussion, and all about change and the brain and being aware and emotional intelligence. It's just been an incredible topic. Thank you.
Yeah, and I
appreciate the work that you're both doing and the opportunity to be part of making a difference with you.
Yeah, thank you. My life is richer because of this. Of our time together, so thank you for that. You've been listening today to Inspiration at Work and our guest, Phil Johnson, and we just want to continue to encourage you in all that you do to make life better for others, to make the world a better place, and above all, would you please be today the most inspiring person that you know? Till next time, bye-bye.
You have been listening to Inspiration at Work on the GII Network with your host, Terry Barber. Find us on the web at www.inspirationboulevard.com and follow us on Twitter @Inspiration Boulevard.